You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, March 17th, 2025. Grandpa Dan joining you once again, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Starting off yet another week. Starting off with another edition of the Daily Mail Monday, where we look through some various articles from the Daily Mail for this wonderful, wonderful Monday. And once again, I have to apologize in advance because once again, we're kind of doing U.S. political stuff, a lot of Trump stuff basically today. And I apologize if that's a little redundant, but you have to understand, as I've said before, we're using the Daily Mail, so we lose our options here. Just to give you an idea, I'm looking at the sidebar of the first story we're going to do. And let's see, Hollywood actress tears into Harry and Meghan, revealing why the public are sick of them. Insiders reveal savage reason Timothy Chalamet's close friends don't like Kylie Jenner and his extreme act of retaliation. What really happened in Kim Kardashian's robbery hell as Parisian gang finally faced justice after almost a decade? Glamorous model who's had over 25 cosmetic surgeries reveal the common procedures you should never get. But can you guess her age? So see, we're not doing any of that. We're not doing any royal family. So it tends to kind of cool down our options here. So we wind up once again talking about a lot of Trump stuff and things such as that. But we're still going to have some fun. So let us jump right in discussing this glamorous model who's had a... No, we're not discussing glamorous model who's had a bunch of plastic surgery. Our first story is Trump to speak with Putin on Tuesday as he previews high stakes call on Ukraine ceasefire deal. President Donald Trump confirmed that he will speak to Russia's President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday. I'll be speaking to President Putin on Tuesday. A lot of work's been done over the weekend, Trump revealed. We want to see if we can bring the war to an end, Trump told reporters on Air Force One as he traveled back to D.C. from Mar-a-Lago on Sunday. Maybe we can, maybe we can't, but I think we have a very good chance. You have to love, I'll stop right there for a minute, because you have to love how they've shifted now and they're just pretending like the U.S. is the third party. Yeah. They're just this disinterested third party who's now mediating the conflict. When everybody with an IQ above room temperature in a very cold climate knows that this whole thing has been a proxy war against Russia from the West, meaning primarily the United States and their European vassal states, who that's another topic for another day. You have these vassal states that have absolutely lost the plot. They're forgetting their vassal states. They've completely tied themselves to the U.S. And now that the U.S. is changing direction and honestly continues in its downward spiral, they have no clue what to do. They've been slaves for so long. They don't know what to do. You know, and they're running around like yapping. Like they're going to dictate policy. They don't know what to do. Increasingly erratic, but erratic behavior. You have to. I'm going to try to stay on track here, though. You have to love how now they're trying to shift the narrative. This is because they're trying to frame this as something other than yet another loss for the U.S. So now all of a sudden they're switching up the narrative and they're trying to frame this as the U.S. is stepping in now to try to bring peace between these two parties. And like the U.S. is not even a party to the conflict when the whole conflict. It's been instigated and run by the U.S. and their vassal states, particularly the UK. Now, why do I mention that? Why does that matter? Because it tells you who's lost. This conflict has lost. When Trump says the Ukraine is losing, he means the U.S. is losing. The reframe tells you some truth. It tells you which side is losing. So they're trying to sue for peace now, and yet they're trying to frame this up as something other than what it is. Trump said he plans to discuss land and power plants with the Russian leader regarding potential concessions. I think we have a lot of it already discussed, very much by both sides, Ukraine and Russia, Trump continued. We're already talking about that, dividing up certain assets. Over the weekend, he made bold predictions about a ceasefire deal in Ukraine. Well, I have a question for you here. The winning side doesn't have to make concessions. You know, he's talking about, well, where they're proposing what concessions Russia is going to make. Russia doesn't have, the winning side doesn't have to make concessions. This would be like the U.S. floating into, you know, into Tokyo at the end of World War II and then talking about what concessions they have to make to the Japanese. That's not how it works. Whoever wins a conflict dictates the terms. Now, of course, we don't know, you know, in all fairness, we don't know what the actual discussions are. This crap they released to the media is just that. But I do find it funny that it is being framed. Also find it interesting that you notice shift. The Daily Mail has been one of the sources of the most absolutely ridiculous Ukraine propaganda. Now you have an article from the Daily Mail, and they're not even pretending like they wrote these stories about, oh, Russians are on the flee, they're out of missiles, and they're very demoralized, and why the Ukraine could have Crimea by next week, or what other kind of ridiculous nonsense. Now we're shifting, which is we're all going along with the program. You got to, Trump is threatening, if Russia doesn't go along, it's going to be super-duper sanctions. Again, anybody with any idea, you know, who's been paying any attention to what's going on. I mean, sanctions again? Really? That's what you're bringing for your stick. They're talking about bringing carrots and sticks. Carrots and sticks. And the stick is more sanctions. This doesn't project strength. It projects impotence. Because this is all they've got. Because they've lost. You've lost. Now, the Russian side, you know, diplomacy being what it is, you know, I think they will provide the U.S. some form of face-saving exit that they can wave around and trumpet and say, see, we got what we wanted and we brought peace to the region. I don't look for them to just try to smear it in their face because that's not how diplomacy works. Remember, war is about achieving political goals. That's it. It's not about, it is not even, I mean, the whole blowing things up and killing people is a part of war, but it's not the goal of war. And that's what most people miss. The goal of a war is to achieve your political ends. If you can achieve the political ends with diplomacy, you do that because it's a lot easier and a lot cheaper than, you know, going to war. But the goal is to achieve your political ends. Russia is winning, so they're going to look to have achieved their political ends. They're not going to give up on that. They don't care if they have to give up some, you know, window dressing items so the U.S. can then take that and have a little face saving to go back with. They don't have a problem with that. What they are going to have a problem with is not achieving their political goals because there's no motivation for them to do. They can just continue doing what they're doing. It doesn't matter how much more war, how much more weapons the U.S. provides. It doesn't matter. I mean, yes, that can kind of slow things down, but the trajectory, there's nothing the U.S. can bring to the table here aside from direct conflict, boots on the ground, and that's not going to happen. There's nothing they can bring to the table that's going to change the direction of the conflict. And I think everybody involved actually knows this. They're not going to say that in the media, but I think everybody involved knows this. So what now then? You know, what are they going to do? What kind of face-saving measures will they have so the U.S. can somehow paint this up as something other than just simply losing again? Meanwhile, the U.S. is number two greatest ally, because we all know who their number one greatest ally is. Their number two greatest ally the UK, the mighty British Empire. You know, they're out there running around talking about, they're trying to play this other angle up. We're going to put, I read another story this morning. They're talking, Starmer and them are talking about, they could put 30,000 British troops on the ground in the Ukraine. I don't even know if they could muster 30,000 troops, really. Because, I mean, 30,000 troops doing what? I mean, because if they're talking about, what I mean is, if you're talking about 30,000 troops on the ground, people always just act like they can materialize these people here. Like, we're going to set 30,000 troops on the ground with their rifles at the ready and maybe some tanks, and that way the Russians don't get any funny ideas. If you put 30,000 combat troops on the ground, then you're probably going to have, at minimum, twice that in logistics and support. You've got to feed these guys. They're going to have water. They're going to have, somebody's going to have to build a camp for them to live in, you know, a base. You're going to have way more than 30,000. Now, if you're talking about 30,000 total, then what? You're talking about maybe 5,000 actual combat troops. And that's nothing. The idea is, and you like how the UK and the French were talking all this shit about, oh yeah, we got no problem putting troops. But the only way that can happen is if, you know, we're being backed by the US. In other words, we want the US to do any actual fighting because we can't. I wish the U.S. would tell them to sit down and shut the hell up. It is really, they're not fooling anybody. Maybe they're just trying to fool their domestic audience. I don't know. I doubt people in the U.K. are really too, I doubt that Keir Starmer is going to get a big polling boost over this Ukraine nonsense. I think they have a little more to worry about. I just find it silly. The losing side acting as though now they're a third party, you know, they're just disinterested. You know, they're just stepping in here, trying to negotiate peace. We want some peace. We want to end to the conflict. Of course, you want to end to the conflict because you're losing and you've used up a whole bunch of your weapons. And this money's gone. A bunch of people all over the world, including back here in the U.S., have pocketed a chunk of it. But nevertheless, I mean, the well at some point, it's going to run dry. Speaking of losing, we can go to our next story. Why the U.S. Navy is losing. This is getting to be, this is getting to be an ongoing theme with the U.S. and these military operations. And it's always the first go-to thing. You know, like the old saying, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. The U.S.'s go-to thing has been to use the military for decades now. And maybe that would work to an extent if you were winning. I mean, imagine you keep going back to the well and it keeps turning out the same way. You know, you just continue to lose. And yeah, you go back and we're going to do it this time. Just as in our previous article, you know, the U.S. goes back to sanctions. If Russia doesn't agree, we're going to do more sanctions. The ones they've been doing, I mean, what is left to sanction? They're talking about really cracking down on this Russian oil that's still slipping through to the EU. Well, it sounds more to me like sanctions against the EU. The EU being the Europeans being the masochists they are, they can't wait for more sanctions to make their countries even worse, to punish their people even worse. Likewise here, the U.S. goes back to the well, and we're going to do airstrikes against the Houthis again because that's worked so well so far. The United States delivered punishing airstrikes on Yemen this weekend, attacking positions held by the Houthi rebel forces. Again, they've done this before. If it's so effective, how come they're having to go back and do it again? The part that's the quiet part that's not being said out loud is it didn't work, and they've got nothing else, so they're going to just do it again. Maybe this time it'll actually work. The strikes, which killed at least 53 people and injured hundreds, according to the Houthi-run health ministry, came as Donald Trump vowed to use overwhelming lethal force to stop the Houthis from disrupting global shipping in the Red Sea. Well, they're not disrupting all global shipping. We've been over this time and again. Dr. Johnson's covered this time and again here on Radio Albion. They're disrupting Israeli-based shipping. Shipping to Israel. Shipping coming out of Israel. This is about Israel. They say global Because, I mean, I guess technically it is, because you're talking about Israel and the United States or Israel and Europe. But they're conspicuously leaving out the common denominator here, which is Israel. Because if they frame this up as this is all about Israel, everybody might be tempted to say, well, wait a minute. Why are we paying more? Why is global shipping costs going up, which is what they're alleging here as we get through this article? Why is global shipping costs going up? Because we have to do this for Israel. Most people, I don't think, really agree with what Israel's doing to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. In a lengthy statement published on his Truth Social platform, why does he do this? This Truth Social. Nobody reads. Who's on Truth Social? I think the only person on Truth Social is Donald Trump. Just go back to Twitter already. And no, I won't call it X. Go back to Twitter already. Trump warned the Houthis, hell will rain down upon you like nothing you have ever seen before if they continue to target Western commercial and military vessels with missiles and drones. He also ordered Iran, the Houthis' main backer, to stop supporting the group immediately, declaring, America will hold you fully accountable and we won't be nice about it. Yes, because you've been so nice to the Iranians so far. We will try to bully you even harder if you don't listen this time. Again, this doesn't come off as somebody who's really in control and being strong. This comes off as just more impotent yelling and screaming. But the Houthis immediately struck back, launching missile and drone attacks at the USS Harry Truman aircraft carrier and forcing U.S. Air Force and Navy jets to scramble to protect the vessel. The U.S. has long boasted the most powerful armed forces in the world. I would stop there and say that's not correct. They have boasted about that. That part's correct. But as far as being the most powerful armed forces in the world, time and time again, when that statement is made, if you look at what metrics are being referred to, it's cost. They're by far, multiple times, yes, the most expensive armed forces in the world. This goes back to the point I made earlier, I've made before. You always want to remember the point of military action is to achieve political goals. It's not about how many people you kill. You can kill a whole bunch of the other side and still lose because you didn't achieve your political goals. It's always a context you want to keep in mind. Now, the U.S. has had, yes, they've got the most expensive military in the world, but how well has it been able to accomplish their political goals? But so far, this military might has been powerless to prevent the Houthis from triggering a global shipping crisis as they continue to threaten Western ships. In November 2023, the Houthis, one of several groups backed by the Islamic Republic of Iran, began launching missiles, drone, and naval attacks on Western commercial vessels in the Red Sea in retaliation for Israel's bombardment of Gaza. So it's not out of the blue. You have to get down here a little ways before they at least admit this much. The attacks meant that many commercial shipping companies could no longer transit the Suez Canal, a vital maritime passageway splitting Africa and the Middle East that used to carry roughly 30% of world container traffic. Instead, ships heading to Western Europe from Asia have been forced to circumnavigate the entire African continent, adding up to 2 weeks to their time at sea. The effect of the Houthi attacks has been profound. A survey by the British Chamber of Commerce last year found the prices of shipping a container from Asia to Europe had gone up by as much as 300% for some businesses. While IMF shipping data showed the volume of shipping in the Suez Canal has been cut in half. Fortunately, the disruption has not driven up inflation and consumer costs, World Bank figures show, but experts warn this could soon change if the crisis continues. I got to stop there because this is an important point, and I'm reading a little more of this article than I normally do. Why? Why has it not driven up inflation and consumer costs for everybody? Because this shipping is about Israel. It's not about everybody else. They've made it clear that they have a channel open that if you're not connected to Israel, you're not a part of supporting what Israel is doing. In other words, if China sails a ship out to go to somewhere, they just get a hold of the Houthis and say, this ship is ours. We're going through. There's nothing to do with Israel. And they just safely travel the thing. The reason it's not driving up shipping costs is because shipping that has nothing to do with Israel is by and large unaffected. Let me skip down a little bit here. Meanwhile, the Iran-backed Houthis have struck deals with the likes of Russian and Chinese shipping companies, as well as the operators of Russia's shadow fleet of oil tankers, allowing them to proceed safely. Because that has nothing to do with Israel. The Houthis' enduring ability to disrupt global shipping comes down to the flexibility and low cost of their operations. The drones used by the Houthis to strike commercial ships and target U.S. Navy vessels are estimated to cost roughly $2,000. More expensive military drones and missiles can increase the figure to $50,000 mark. They require no substantial military infrastructure to deploy and can be launched, controlled, and piloted by a small mobile team. But each time one of these projectiles is fired, the U.S. is forced to deploy fighter jets or ship-launched missiles to intercept it, the cost of which can range anywhere from several hundred thousand dollars to 2 to 3 million pounds per shot. And there you have some of it. These guys can launch these low-cost deals all day long. And the U.S. response is going to be have to fire these $3 million missiles to bring down this $2,000 drone. That puts attritional warfare in favor of the less well-funded party here, doesn't it? You just shift the costs. You know, normally, you would look at this as if this was an even for even. Well, the U.S. has a lot more money. So you would think, well, at a glance, you would think they would be able to win any sort of battle of attrition with these Houthi guys. So what you do is you just flip the costs to offset that. They can launch $2,000 drones while the U.S. shoots them down with $3 million missiles. And you switch that attrition in the other side's favor. Now, because we have these shifting narratives and whatnot, the lies have to continue to be moved around. And sometimes I laugh. Because I laugh a lot, actually, because as I've said before, because you're dealing with liars, they operate on the assumption that you're not going to remember their lie from like literally last week. Next story, Trump's approval rating breaks new record while Democrats hit all-time low as poll reveals if Americans think the country is on the right track. Donald Trump's approval rating has soared to new heights while a separate poll shows Democrats have hit an all-time low. I'll stop there right off the bat because like literally, I think it was last week. Literally, I read another story on Yahoo News talking about Trump flailing around as his approval rating is collapsing. So which is it? Both of these are mainstream media sources. You know, we're supposed to trust these authoritative sources. But then on the other hand, like last week, they're telling us that Trump's approval rating is just collapsing in on itself and he's desperate now to save it and salvage it somehow. But now we have another story, and it's citing, of all things, a CNN poll, saying his approval ratings are soaring to new heights while the Democrats. While the Democrats are in free fall. So which is it? If you're contrary, you tell people, oh, trust valid sources. Don't trust these randos on the internet. Don't trust these conspiracy debunked people. Trust the experts. Trust the media. And you literally have to forget what the hell they said last week to do that. 44% of Americans came together to agree that America is on the right track under Trump's leadership. This is the highest satisfaction rating in this category of registered voters since early 2004. Trump's approval rating, according to NBC poll, is 47%. Which is the highest he's ever polled during his political career. Similarly, his personal favorable rating is 46%. The Democrats, meanwhile, are struggling across the political sphere. This is all theater. And I know that y'all know this. I know it. I guess the vast majority of people don't know. This is all theater. All of this has been negotiated out. All this is being worked out. And we're just being given a show here. A lot of people, a lot of people don't get that. On both sides of the supposed political spectrum here. Here's somebody who doesn't get it. Fed up MSNBC host stuns panel as she reveals reason she is leaving the Democratic Party. No one cares. Who are these people? I don't understand. I don't understand how people get so arrogant that they think everybody really cares about what they're going to do. Like, this is earth-shattering. Like, who cares? I mean, if I announced today that, I don't know, I'm going all in on MAGA, every show I'll wear a red hat, or the other, I am now a never Trumper, and I'm going to be total against Trump. You know, I don't have any illusions that anybody would really give a shit. It's not going to change. It's not going to change the world. I marvel sometimes at people's arrogance. That they think this is a big deal. Of course, you get articles like this that try to act like it's a big deal. And again, you have to ask, who cares? I don't care. MSNBC host Simone Sanders Townsend left her panel speechless after declaring live on air that she will leave the Democratic Party to become an independent. Well, I'm sure the Democrat Party will never recover from this. Her announcement came while blasting Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and fellow Democrats for caving to Republican demands in order to avoid the latest government shutdown. This is what happens when you have people that don't understand what they're actually watching. It doesn't make sense to them. They're like, why aren't the Democrats standing up and fighting the Republicans and doing this? Because Trump was allowed to get in because he negotiated a deal. We're just watching the back and forth. Trump is being allowed to do this stuff, some of the stuff he's doing on the domestic front, because of deals he made to be allowed to be elected president. How do people not understand that? I guess if you live in such a weird, secluded world, like I can't even imagine, that you actually think Joe Biden somehow legitimately won in 2020. I don't know what to tell you if that's what you think, because that requires such a suspension of belief and understanding that it boggles the mind. It even boggles my mind. This is, you're watching deals made out. All of a sudden, Chuck Schumer says, well, this is the best we can do. We got to go along with what, you know, with give Trump this, because, you know, we'll come back and do something else later. No, this is, the deal has already been worked out. You're just watching the theater. I'm peed, this is all asterisked out, Sanders Townsend said bluntly during the weekend show as she shared her outrage over Schumer's decision to suddenly back the Republican-led spending bill that averted a government shutdown. There's actually little that the Senate minority leader can say, and the 10 Democrats that voted with the Republicans can say, to appease somebody like me. I'm going to change my registration to independent, the frustrated Sanders Townsend said, and nobody cares. Like, if I criticize something Donald Trump is doing here, I don't have these visions that there's people in the Trump White House sitting around wringing their hands over it. I don't have an illusion that anybody gives a shit. And I think it might be arguable who has a bigger audience. Because I don't know who watches these people. I mean, really, who actually watches these people? Who cares? But they seem to think they care. Her on-the-air bombshell stunned the panel with her stance similar to what many are now calling the beginning of a political fracture within the Democratic Party ranks and a rife that could lead to a progressive uprising against the party's establishment. Schumer, long regarded as a master of tactical voting in the Senate, found himself at the center of a political firestorm after voting in favor of a stopgap spending bill late on Friday night. I don't know. You know, I don't know how you don't get it. You know, this stuff, it's so obvious. I mean, y'all see it, right? I see it. This is so obvious. How do you not get what you're watching here? It doesn't make sense to me why Chuck Schumer would go along with this. But Chuck Schumer's not stupid. He's not acting randomly here.
I don't understand. There's no excuses. There's nothing they can say to explain this.
Well, if they're acting, you know, rationally, and I don't think there's any reason to think Chuck Schumer is acting irrationally here. If they're acting rationally and then you're out here talking about how you don't understand how they could do this, you're just basically admitting that you're a moron. You don't get it. There's a deal has been made. Trump was allowed to get in this time. He negotiated a deal. He spent months and months, possibly years, negotiating a deal. This is what he's going to give, and this is what he's going to get in return. Chuck Schumer understands this. Chuck Schumer made a call and he was told, you're going to go ahead and vote for this and let it go through. This is a part of the deal. We have to hold up our end of the bargain because Trump's holding up his end of the bargain of giving us what we want. Now, look, I'm not insulting this person. It may sound like I am. I'm not insulting this person. But, I mean, get a clue. You know, I mean, really, this isn't hard to figure out. I don't understand why they're doing this. Well, because they're in on it. A deal has been made. People that go around and act like this system is about politicians responding to voters. And I'm painting with a broad brush here. It doesn't matter which of these teams you cheerlead for. You know, these people that still have this vision that politicians care about voters. Nothing could be further from the truth. Yeah, that's just not the way the system works. And when you're confused and you don't understand why they're not responding to the voters, you're just admitting, you're tacitly admitting that you don't understand how the system works. And again, this isn't really hard. Maybe this goes back, you know, and this isn't, I'm using this person example because there's tons of other people that obviously don't understand. And again, regardless of which team they cheerlead for, the team our cheerleaders are going, oh, hooray, we're finally, you know, I saw someone recently and they made a statement along the lines of, you know, there may not be another Democrat president elected for 30 years. It's like, no, if the next one can negotiate a deal to get put in there, they'll be in there. It's nothing to do with what the voters, that's just what they tell you. That's just what they tell you. They put people in there. They negotiate these deals. Sometimes they put people in there because you can get what you want. You know, for instance, when an American citizen and then shortly after that, his son were executed by the United States government in the name of a war on terror without any sort of trial, without any sort of legal proceeding, regardless of their citizenship status, they were ordered to be executed, and they were executed by the President of the United States. There was zero outrage from these people. Why? Because that was done by Barack Obama. If it had been done by Donald Trump, there would have been organized protests in the streets. You see, sometimes somebody has to be put in there to do something and move things along. Because right now, I see the other side of that. You know, Trump is talking about he's deporting people from universities for criticizing Israel. And of course, now the Team D cheerleaders are having a meltdown about it, while the Team R cheerleaders are like, heck yeah, these people shouldn't be in our country anyway. Never stopping to think, well, yeah, you always start with people that, you know, are least sympathetic, but why do you think they're going to stop there? What's going to be the answer to, I don't know, non-green card holders, actual American citizens, to criticizing Israel? Do you think the piece of paper called the Constitution is going to do that? Because I'm pretty sure it's unconstitutional for the President Obama to execute American citizens without a trial. just because they decided they were terrorists, or actually supporting terrorists. People never put this stuff together. Instead, they just cheer, rah-rah their team. If a Democrat president was talking about shutting down people's speech, then the other side would be hollering at it. You see what I'm saying? Sometimes they put these people in so they can push that agenda. If you have an anti-war sentiment on one side, you put their guy in and they'll shut up to cheer for their side. It's okay if their team is doing it. For any of us that were around during the whole thing where they passed the Patriot Act, you understand? You have this track record to go off of. How many terrorists have been tracked down due to the Patriot Act? Think about that while you're being practically, you know, patted down at the airport. So many people don't have any clue how this system works. And then they just go around being confused. You got these people that think the American military is the most powerful military on the face of the planet. How come we can't seem to win anything? Because it's not the most powerful military on the face of the planet. It's the most expensive. Because now we find out that all of this government budget, be it defense, be it whatever, a huge percent of it is just theft. It's just a money scam. They're just passing the money around and claiming they spent it on all this stuff. The U.S. has its most expensive military, and yet they're running out of stuff. They can't win because it's all graft. It's all corruption. It's not hard to understand when you understand how the system actually works. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you have a great week. I'll be back tomorrow with the Parish of the Patriot show. You don't want to miss it. It's a good time. I think so. It's a really good time. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be here Wednesday with his Orthodox Nationalist show. I know y'all always look forward to that. And Dr. Johnson will round off our week because we wind up the week here at Radio Albion on Thursday, because that's the way we got. We're like government workers. We got bankers' hours here. Dr. Johnson will be here. Wrap out your week for Thursday with his Daily Nationalist program. And that's, again, is always something you want to catch. Always something you want to give a listen to. Again, I hope you have a great week. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk radio for the nationalist community.